Like much of rural America, Gerald, Missouri, population 1,171, has a persistent problem with methamphetamine. Then, a few months ago, a man who called himself Sergeant Bill arrived in town. Sergeant Bill identified himself to local police as a federal agent. He wore a T-shirt that read, "Police." He had a badge, and he began to make arrests. As it turns out, the badge Sergeant Bill brandished was more Woolworths than Washington. Sergeant Bill wasn't a sergeant at all. For months, Bill Jacob, who used to work as a wedding minister and as a security guard, pretended to be a federal drug agent. He duped residents of Gerald, Missouri. He fooled police officers. Eventually, an enterprising reporter for the local newspaper unraveled the impersonation. From time to time here at the museum, we ask journalists, how'd you get that story? And today we put that question to Linda Trest, a staff writer for the Gasconade County Republican in Owensville, Missouri. If you'd like to talk with her about her story, especially if you live in Gerald, Missouri, our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org, and you can join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Linda Trest is with us today from the member station in St. Louis, KWMU, and thanks very much for your time today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And how did you unravel this story?
Well, I unraveled the story by just kept asking questions. I found out about the story when people told me that there was a federal agent in town who claimed to be from two different federal agencies, didn't need search warrants, and was just very brash in his manner. When I began checking around, I couldn't come up with names or any information on him. So with the help of our Franklin County Sheriff, Gary Tolke, I eventually, after several weeks, was able to discover his name, and then was able to find out he was not a law enforcement officer in the state of Missouri or anywhere else, and was certainly not a federal agent.
And he was, in fact, well, even if he was going in and searching people without a warrant?
Yes, he was.
And as I understand it, that's really, some people called you and said, what's going on? I watch Law and Order on TV. I watch CSI. Those people need warrants.
It was really kind of unusual because people weren't sure whether you still needed search warrants. You know, they said, we know they can now tap our phones, so maybe they don't need search warrants either anymore. People were confused because he said he was a federal agent. They thought maybe he was allowed to play under different rules. And that's when the sheriff said, oh, absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone needs a search warrant.
What about the police, though? In Gerald, did they not think he needed a search warrant?
They backed his story up and said federal agents did not need search warrants.
And have they
certainly
read the Constitution lately?
Evidently, they have not. But, you know, I'm sure it made their job much easier to ignore that one little piece of paper called a search warrant.
And that's one aspect of this story that makes it pretty interesting. He was doing a pretty good job. He was cleaning up a lot of people that, a lot of people wanted cleaned up.
I disagree with that. I don't think that there is a huge methamphetamine problem in Gerald. There is certainly a meth problem, as there is everywhere. The amount of drugs that they confiscated is minuscule compared to the damage they've done. I think a significant amount of marijuana is the biggest recovery they made.
But the police seemed to go along with him because they thought he was getting results.
The police, I believe, went along with him because they were able to write impressive press releases.
Huh. And his methods were less than gentle, as I understand it.
That's absolutely for sure. He kicked the doors literally off the hinges in at least two homes, but always kicked his way in, immediately ordered everyone to the floor, always had a gun that was described as a sawed-off shotgun with a pistol grip, in many cases pointed it to the heads or faces of the people who he was arresting, did this with their children in the room watching it all, handcuffed everyone, the moms, the dads, anybody in the house was handcuffed, drug out into the front yard in front of their neighbors, and then were asked to start naming names.
And then asked to start naming names. And you're suggesting that who was he, you know, when you found out who was he really?
He was an unemployed past security guard who had worked part-time at best, lived with his in-laws, I believe. He and his wife lived with her parents and was no one connected with law enforcement.
And do we know why he did this?
No, we don't. He's told the media since that time that he did it to try to help. His story is that he came to town on an innocent conversation with the chief of police and was kind of lured into this kicking down doors and being a federal agent scam. The chief of police said at that time that he came in claiming to be a federal agent.
And that he
I'm not sure which story is correct.
But he also claimed that Sergeant Bill had set up this phony phone line to check his credentials.
That's correct. The chief of police did say that. And that when he faxed the information in, he called to confirm. A female answered, said everything was in order. And then Mr. Jacob told him a few days later his boss had approved his transfer. He now belonged to the Gerald Police Department.
And where?
He was there at their disposal.
And there at their disposal, and thus began. And how long did this go on?
It went on for at least a month. It went on a really regular basis. They said he had come into town about 2 months prior to that and would just come in a couple of times a week.
Now, as I understand it, though you report for the Gasconade County Republican, and that's based in a town, what, about 10 miles away from Gerald, that you live in Gerald.
That's correct. And the Gasconade County Republican has a section in their paper that covers the town of Gerald.
And I wonder what's been the reaction of your neighbors to the disclosures in your newspaper?
The people that I've talked to are angry. They're very, very angry that this happened, that his credentials were never checked, that checks weren't made on him that are made on people's dogs. If you have a dog in the city of Gerald, you're required to show paperwork that it's been vaccinated and buy a license for it. And even that cursory check wasn't done on a man that was allowed to carry a firearm and have access to all of the records in City Hall.
Let's see if we can get a caller on the line. And if you'd like to join us, our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. Our guest is Linda Trest, a staff writer for the Gasconade County Republican. And why don't we go to Michael. And Michael's on the line with us from Boston.
Hi. What does it say about police enforcement of the law in general and the drugs war in particular that we're appalled by this private citizen doing many of the things that actual federal agents do every day and doesn't seem to raise an eyebrow? They do get warrants, but quite often the warrants are based upon, let's say, less than solid evidence. But beyond that, his behavior seems kind of normal, and we're appalled, whereas, you know, if he had a real badge, then it would be okay.
Well, not the warrant part, but Linda Trest, I wonder if you've thought about that.
I have thought about that, and I'm glad he brought that question up. The main focus of the story, since it's become national, has been on, you know, what a Hooterville this makes our town look like. It makes a small town America look silly. And I don't think that's the case. I think that's a very valid point. The actions of Mr. Jacob and the Gerald Police Department are not uncommon. Too often we look the other way when one small portion of anyone's civil rights are violated. And as a nation, we all made smaller by that. And I think it's time that we insisted that all law enforcement agencies, federal, local, everywhere, reread the Constitution and really understand what those are. Because that Constitution covers everyone, even low-life drug users. They still have civil rights, and they need to be upheld.
Michael, thanks for the call. Let's see if we can go now to this is Jim. Jim's with us from Eagle River in Alaska.
Hello. Thank you. Yes, I'd like to comment that the police chief in Gerald reportedly claims he tried a few checks and he thought it he claims essentially incompetence. And I've noticed a lot of people who have taken oath claim incompetence when they're discovered cheating. And it appears to me incompetence is frequently a cover for corruption. And it should be treated as an admission of corruption when someone claims incompetence.
Well, what's happened to the police chief there in Gerald?
At this point, nothing. He was investigated as well. The charges are all waiting down in the federal attorney's office. The charges should be filed sometime this month. But at the moment, Chief McCrary is also free and is waiting for charges to be filed. It'll be interesting to see what he will be charged with.
When you say also free, is Sergeant Bill free?
Oh, absolutely. He was flown to New York City yesterday and has been appearing on talk shows all day today.
I guess, as a reward for his activities. Jim, thanks very much for the call.
Yes, you're welcome. That's amazing.
Yeah. Let's see if we can go now to line 7, if I can find the right button. Maggie with us from Lansing in Michigan.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had wondered, are all of these cases going to be compromised since there were no warrants? If there were any drugs or any potential criminals taken during this time, are those going to be compromised now?
Fruit of the poison tree is, I think, the phrase that's used in legal terminology for an illegal search.
If they weren't compromised just by the fact that he wasn't a federal agent, there was an event that happened that I'm sure spoiled all the cases, and that was the chief spread the evidence out around his office on Saturday afternoon. Most of the evidence was gathered on Thursday, and they got some kind of call, and he and every other police officer in the Gerald Police Department went running out, jumped in their cars, grilled out of the parking lot, and left the doors unlocked, left the chief's office doors open. The evidence was out in plain sight and touch, and they left a prisoner handcuffed to the bench. And there was no law enforcement. There were two civilian women left behind.
And thus
as well
raising
as a prisoner.
Well, chain of custody seems the least of their problems, I have to say. Maggie, thanks very much for the call. At that level, who appointed the police? Is this an elected position in Gerald?
No, it's appointed by the mayor. Chief McCrary was the fourth police chief appointed from April till January of last year. So in that eight-month period of time, he was the fourth police chief. And he was very new to the job. He was very new to – doesn't have a lot of law enforcement experience and is fairly young. And I might say that the mayor also walked through the chief's office, saw the evidence laying out, saw the doors open, the doors unlocked, and no one seemed to think that that was worth even talking to the chief of police about.
Again, our guest is Linda Trest of the Gasconade County Republican, who broke the story that Bill Jacob was not a real federal officer in Gerald, Missouri. He was trying to arrest what he thought were meth dealers. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go to Charles. And Charles with us from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
You all may have already covered this, and I may have missed it, but I have several friends from high school that are in law enforcement, and the warrant issue aside, when they go into or make entries, particularly a forced entry into a domicile or a building, they're required to identify themselves and have badges showing, you know, show identification. Did this guy do this, or what happened with that?
That's a great question. No, he didn't do that. Several of the people asked who he was, and he said, I'm a federal agent. That's all you need to know. You can call me Sergeant Bill. That's all you need to know. He would never identify himself with any agency beyond the first day. The first day, he said, would say either that he was a federal marshal or a DEA agent. Beyond that, he wouldn't tell people or give his last name.
And did anybody look at the badge at all?
No, he wouldn't hold it up long enough for anyone to. I understand it was a badge left over from his days as a security guard.
As a security guard. Okay. Thanks very much, Charles.
Well, thank you very much.
Let's see if we can go to – that's the wrong button. I'll hang up there. Let's go to Glenn. Glenn in Columbus, Ohio.
A lot of times police confiscate cash that they think is associated with drug crimes, even though the person they take the money from is never – charged. Did any money change hands this way and stay in the police department?
There are several reports from people who say cash is missing from their home. In one case, a man had gone next door to his neighbors and had just gotten there when he noticed the Gerald police pull up. They broke down his door, entered his home. He had left $80 on his coffee table. When he got back home, the money was gone, and the police were gone. They never even told him that they'd been in his house. There's another case of some old money, some antique money that was in a jar that the police took as evidence. They said that was evidence that he was a drug dealer. Even though the jar was so dusty and the spot on the dresser around it was so dusty, it was clear it hadn't been moved in months. And that's now missing.
How much longer we can put up with this stuff. It's crazy.
Thanks very much for the call, Glenn. And that raises the point. Did you have a question here in the audience at the museum? Go ahead.
Yes. My name is Lauren Vitz, and I'm from Chicago, Illinois. And I was just wondering, you had said that he went to New York to do some talk shows. Do you plan on going to more public venues to tell your side of the story?
Hey, this is a public venue.
Not that Talk of the Nation isn't a big venue, but, you know, to things that are maybe more nationally always.
You were on the CBS early show this morning, okay. Correct?
That's correct. I was. And I do think this is the peak right here.
Well, any thoughts that we had that the people out there in rural Missouri are rubes just vanished. You're very media savvy. And I did want to ask, though, what's the fallout going to be? Is the sheriff, the county sheriff, still investigating?
The investigation's complete. The sheriff's department, the highway patrol, and the FBI did a coordinated investigation. And it took a long time because there were so many people whose civil rights were violated. But they have compiled a report and turned it over to the U.S. attorney. And they will not say anything until the charges have been filed. There'll be no further word now until the charges have actually been filed. But if things go as they normally do, that should come in about 2 weeks.
Linda Trest, great story. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks again for having me.
Linda Trest, a staff writer for the Gasconade County Republican, with us today from the studios of KWMU, our member station in St. Louis. You can find links to several of her articles on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.